Well, good afternoon. It's glad to have you here. I'm Nolan Crabb, and I chair the PR committee. I'm sorry I'm not able to be with you this afternoon in person, but I'm grateful to Katie and others who are making this possible via the FaceTime. We want to welcome everyone connected via ACB radio. Our thanks to Larry for his willingness to stream these proceedings, and we're hopeful that you'll benefit from it as well if you're listening this afternoon. Our panel today is going to deal with three issues. I'm going to spend some time with you on the concept of how we minimize difficulties if something goes wrong in our affiliate that garners bad publicity. And we'll do that in a good, positive way. And then we're going to have Mike Duke talk a little bit about how to write the kind of press release that gets attention. And then Brian Charlson is here to talk a bit about how we become experts that the media will listen to. And that's important and crucial in our affiliate work as well. We want them to come to us and look to us for direction and for answers. And he'll talk a bit about how that's done.
We actually need to let Brian...
I want to acknowledge...
Sorry.
Oh, does he have to go first?
No, but he's going to go after you because he does have to get somewhere else.
Okay. Of course. I apologize for mixing that order up. I want to acknowledge the entire committee. They've been a great group of people. And they worked hard, and I'm grateful to all of them. My hope is that I don't forget any of them, but very quickly we have Katie Frederick on the committee, Brian Charlson, Mike Duke, Annie Chepeta, Deanna Noriega, and Artis Bazin, Tom Mitchell, Dave Trott, and me, and I'm trying to think if I've left anyone out. If I did, I'm sorry. Sharon's on there. Sharon Lovering, of course. I've known her for so many years, I just, kind of forget that she's a member of the committee, too. I know she's staff, and she's so helpful that we just kind of, grateful to have her there. Any others? I think that's it.
No, that's it.
Okay, cool. Let me go ahead and get started. Unless, Brian, do you need to go first?
Go for it, Nolan.
Okay. I want to spend some time with you today, and I hope to get your interaction as well, and talk with you a little bit about how to minimize difficulty with the media if something goes wrong in your affiliate. I'm going to begin by asking you a question, and I would like you to applaud with a yes answer if the answer is yes. Are there any people in the room who have taken a Tylenol in the last 90 days? Applaud if you took a Tylenol sometime in the last 90 days. All right. Most of you in the room were born after 92. And if that's true, and you have a pretty good memory of what happened to Johnson & Johnson and Tylenol in 1982, my first question would be, why did you take that pill in the last 60 or 90 days, your memory being what it is? Anybody want to take a shot at that answer?
Because they work.
Because they work. Well put. Anything else?
Nolan?
Yes.
Because they fixed the problem quickly.
Thank you. Because they fixed the problem quickly, Jay says. And that's entirely correct. You took that Tylenol because you trust that that company has solved its problems. We'll talk about that case again in just a few minutes as a good model for how things work in your affiliate. But let me talk to you about four areas where you could really have a problem in terms of having something go wrong and you not doing anything about it. Let me, I apologize for my voice thing here. I've got it under control here. So let's assume that a circumstance has arisen in your affiliate. for lack of a better example, let me just shoot a fictional scenario at you. Let's say that you have a financial officer who is well beloved, and he or she is highly respected and just well thought of by the affiliate. Let's say that you are one of the affiliate leaders, a president, a vice president, whatever. And one day you're talking with this treasurer, and you think, gosh, it's been a while since we looked hard at what's going on with the books there. You're not on a witch hunt because you like this woman or this man, but you decide that maybe you really want to look into things a little more deeply. When you do, you find that there are some discrepancies in your financial system. And those discrepancies are severe. And now you have a problem, and you also know that it could balloon into a public relations nightmare if you handle it badly. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. So, there are several things you can do in terms of handling this situation badly. You can resign and leave it for someone else to deal with. That's always an option. Not a good one, but it's an option. You can play the blame game and put the responsibility on other people. That's real easy to do. Pardon me, if you're in an emotional moment, it's a real simple thing to try to put this down to other people. You can do other things that are equally not good. You can, you can always get involved emotionally and just try to minimize the problem and say, oh, this isn't that big a deal, we're not going to deal with it, and walk away. None of those are good solutions because they damage the reputation of your affiliate. I want to talk with you a little bit about why you need a good reputation in your affiliate. And right now you're rolling your eyes, you're saying, good grief, Nolan, we get that part. Why are you carrying on about that? We already understand that's common sense. Why do you think you need a good reputation as an affiliate of ACB? What are some of the real important reasons why that would be necessary?
You want people to continue to join.
You want people to continue to join.
Yes, absolutely. That's huge. You need people to join with you, and they won't if they think you are below board. Any other thoughts on why that's important?
You need people to trust in you enough to give you their money.
Very well put. You need donors. And one way you get donors is to have people trust you. So trust and reputation are sort of a good... That's the currency that your affiliate trades in. The other good point about having a good, solid reputation is if something does go wrong, the members of your affiliate will rally behind you and help you fix it. If you have a poor reputation, one of the first things that will happen is your affiliate members will say, well, that figures. I expected it to be just like that. So it's really crucial that you work toward having a good, trustworthy reputation in your affiliate. I can't stress that often enough. I'm just skipping ahead here because I want to edit some of this a little bit.
Hold on. There we go. Try again.
During a crisis,
if they believe you are interested, one moment.
Hold on. Sorry, I keep bumping this phone and then it moves.
No problem.
There we go.
There you are.
Okay, we're back. All right. So, let's look at the corollary to this. What happens if you have created a circumstance where the reputation of your affiliate is not so good? What are some of the likely outcomes if you have a problem? Any ideas?
Your membership leaves.
Yes, that's exactly right. You lose membership.
Lose your 501c3.
You really could. You very well could. And the collaborations that you have tried to establish in your community could also disappear. You could have other agencies who say, oh, yuck, I don't want to be part of that. That's a scary bunch. So that's a quick primer on why a reputation really matters. Let's talk now a little bit about some of the things you can do to minimize some of these bad circumstances. And they do happen in our affiliate, don't they? We can all think of circumstances where perhaps the news media got involved somewhere and we didn't know how to handle it, or perhaps things happened that caused some division within the affiliate. Maybe the media didn't get involved, but other things happened and we have problems. So let's talk a little bit about how to do what you need to do. Let's go back to our case of the financial officer who was in trouble. One of the first things you want to do is not act alone. So you don't want to just turn this into a personal witch hunt. You need to perhaps involve other people who can talk with you about what's going on. At some point, you're going to need to involve law enforcement, perhaps, if it's bad enough. When you involve law enforcement, you inevitably will make this a matter of publicity, because law enforcement is obligated to report to the general public its activities, and those activities include investigating your circumstance. So it's going to get published in a blotter, a police record. Whether the media pays attention to that is another matter. If there's one carryaway that I want you to take out of here, it would be your affiliate is not the center of the universe, no matter what you think, because tomorrow afternoon a new story will break somewhere in your town, and it will crowd your affiliate's story off the pages, off the websites. So one of the things that I was stunned by when we had a circumstance in Ohio was that I thought this would just drag on and on and on, and it was this nightmare. And the reality is the media paid very, very little attention to our circumstance. We were only on the news twice, and it was very quick and short-lived. So while I'm not encouraging you to do nothing, you know, I don't want you to just walk away from it and say, well, tomorrow they'll think about something else. The reality is it's not going to go on and on forever, and you need to be aware of that so that you don't feel like you're just in a hopeless, horrible circumstance that you can't fix. So, excuse me, let me jump down and talk to you about how to interact with a reporter. Number one, let's assume it's gone public and that people now know about this. Your membership have seen it on the webpage of Channel 10, and they're coming to friends they have on your board, and they're saying, what the heck's going on? So, the first thing you need to do is be very upfront with your board of directors. Make sure its members are aware of what's going on from your perspective as best you can inform them. What you want to try to do is avoid a my way or the highway approach. Instead, you want to try to lead in the spirit of love, as silly as that sounds, but you want to try to get your board to unify with you as best it can, so that you have a specific spokesperson for your organization during this time of difficulty. What you want to avoid is a circumstance where everybody suddenly becomes an expert on your internal affairs. That's going to lead to real problems, because everybody's going to have a different take. If you can get your board to appoint someone to serve as your affiliate's spokesperson during the tough times, you can all unite together and then do a good job of putting up a united front. So that's crucial. So then we get to the point where the reporters are taking interest in your circumstance. They've learned that a certain amount of money is missing from your books, and they want to talk to you about it. Let's get your input here. What would you do if the reporter calls you from Channel 10 and says, I'd love to come by and interview you? What is your first reaction?
Hesitancy.
You're going to be hesitant, aren't you? Yeah, you're going to be a little concerned. Oh, gosh, what do I do? How do I deal with this?
You're also afraid not to talk to him.
That's right. That's an excellent point. You want to make sure you talk to this person, because
unless there's an attorney that's involved.
Yeah.
Larry.
Yeah, that's.
Larry had a good point. He said, "What about if an attorney gets involved?"
Right, and that away? Can happen. Yeah, that can happen. Under those circumstances, you're going to want to simply be united in your discussions, and you're going to want to keep it unemotional. So let me talk to you about how to interact with a reporter. These are lessons I've learned from when I was a reporter some years ago. Number one, these guys are going to want to try to be your friends. They will ingratiate themselves to you, and they're going to want to become your confidant. That's how they do their job. That's not sleazy. It's not illegal. It's not below board or anything else. That's what they're trying to accomplish. If they can get you to talk to them about what's going on, then they've done their job. The thing you have to remember is you are not the best friend of that reporter, but nor are you his enemy or her enemy. You're there to simply, quietly, without a lot of emotion, portray your circumstances and talk about your perspective as the leader of your affiliate. Be very careful not to engage in anger and call your treasurer a dirty SOB. Number one, he or she hasn't been convicted. You need to be very careful about that. It's real easy to get angry and say, well, that's so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. That's not going to work. You just need to quietly, calmly state your case and recognize that reporter is going to try to get more from you than you're going to have available. Don't be afraid to say, I don't know, or I will work on that answer, but I don't have it right now. For goodness sakes, don't make stuff up and say something like, well, in the perfect world, this is how I think it ought to be. That's not your place. Yeah. You don't want to be a commentator. You're not there to be a talking head. But you can do this. And these reporters don't want to crucify you necessarily. They just want their story. And you need to think about it in that light. These aren't your enemies. So be careful about not libeling your financial officer. Just state your case, explain what happened to the degree that you know, and make sure that the final step in this is make sure that you talk to that reporter about things you're going to do in the future to prevent this from happening again. Why is that important?
You don't want to be painted in a bad light.
Okay. You know, it's crucial because it says to the general public, we're going to implement controls so that you can continue to donate to us, and we're going to make sure this doesn't happen next week, next month, next year. If you stay calm while everybody else is coming unraveled, your membership will rally to you. I can promise you that. Your board will rally to you, and you'll be able to very reasonably and in a controlled fashion present your case. And your volunteers will stay with you as well. And as I said earlier, the media will have an extremely short attention span. This is not going to last forever. So, let's see. Let's go back to the Tylenol case as we conclude here. Let's think back. You recall that 7 people died in Illinois when they took poison capsules. And, of course, the nation went into a slump, panic. Tylenol had had 37% of the market share prior to this incident. Within a day or two of that happening, that market share dropped to 7%. If that. And the company was very much in danger of losing a product that was never going to come back. What do you recall from your own memories of that incident? What did that company do to salvage its product?
I think they created a safety stuff.
Yes! That's exactly right. They took steps and said to you, as a member of the public, we know this happened, and here are the steps we have taken to implement controls to prevent it from happening again. That was huge. What else? Any other thoughts?
Sales.
The
Okay.
Did you hear that, Nolan?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, he can hear pretty well.
Yeah, and that's exactly correct. Again, this goes back to those, this is what we're going to do in the future kind of measures. What did they do almost immediately?
Took it off the shelf.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're right. They did this massive recall. And that's one of those.
They gave you instructions if you saw any of their products tampered.
Yes. That's the point that I'm trying to get to. They were extremely upfront about the problem. Early on, from the very first day of that crisis, the guy who was in charge stepped up to the microphone and the camera and was very open about it. And he bucked a trend because a lot of people advised him to say nothing. You know, this is a field day for the attorneys. The less you say, the less ammunition they have, blah, 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 and on it went. But he took the high road on this and was up front early on. And you're going to need to do that in your affiliate in order to minimize public relations nightmares that can occur when things happen. You're going to need to be open to the degree that you can. In our case in Ohio, there were certain considerations that we had to deal with because the attorneys that we were working with had some boundaries and said, we really want you to stay within those a little bit. And our group did that by and large. We had, you know, it's real easy for members to get power hungry and go out and leak information. And while we had a tiny bit of that, by and large, our group stayed quiet, firm, and faithful and handled that circumstance with a tremendous degree of professionalism. And I still applaud them years later for that experience. That would have been an unsuccessful experience had it not been for that board and for the membership who quietly stood by, adopted a wait-and-see attitude, and then decided to go from there. So, those are my perspectives. Are there any questions?
I've got one comment, Nolan.
Okay, go ahead, please.
And that is, the days when something's going to blow over rapidly, while they do, you're not going to be in the news for more than a day or two.
That's right.
But the internet lives on forever.
Yes.
Forever.
Yeah.
The blessing of
the curse. That's right.
Case in point, at the Carroll Center where I work, there was a story that our director had been seen in the basement, a horrible description of what really was a working floor of our agency, not the basement in your concept of it, you know, dark,
right,
subterranean, was seen improperly touching a female employee.
Oh, dear.
Improperly touching, by the way, was he had his hands across her shoulders.
Oh, dear.
She was not the complainer. Another staff member said something to a friend. And it turned into a sexual harassment suit.
Oh, dear.
And it was instantly, it was made clear that there was no violation of any kind. However, it got into the pages of the Boston Globe.
Of course.
And the minute that something is in the Globe, or a major newspaper,
yep,
everybody links to it. Mm-hmm. And it shows up higher on the search when you put in your organization's name. Not because there was 5,000 stories about it, but because the one story is cross-linked, mm-hmm, throughout whoever's indexing the Boston Globe. So to this day, 5 years later, one of the top five hits you'll always get at the Carroll Center is president seen molesting female employee.
Oh, golly.
So,
oh, golly.
It's worth avoiding getting there.
And oh,
really,
yes, absolutely.
The way you avoid getting there is to be as upfront as possible from the beginning.
That's right.
And also to have good relations with the press. Have,
yes,
them calling you because they trust you. No matter what,
yep,
else they've heard elsewhere.
That's right. Which sort of segues into our next panel.
Right.
So, any other questions or comments?
We'll keep Nolan on the phone so we can have any time for questions at the end if we have some.
All right. Well, I'd like to then turn the time over to Brian Charlson, who will talk to you about the very thing he just brought up, the idea of becoming an expert that the media will turn to.
I expect you to stay on the phone so that you can kibitz with me, right?
Absolutely.
Great, great.
I don't know.
So the second component of our presentation this afternoon is about becoming a subject expert. There are so many times when the press publishes something and we scratch our heads saying, who told them that bit of nonsense? Or they're going to, perhaps they're trying to promote, let's say, greater funding for the school for the blind, and somehow or other they get a hold of the one parent at the school for the blind who has an extra. And you wonder, why didn't the press contact us instead of Mad Myrtle or whatever her name might be? So, this is what I want to talk to you about for
Brian, you need to tell Mike more. Get on the mic. Go to the podium.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
There we go.
Test. Hello.
There
you go. I'm trying. It wasn't working very well. So what happens as a result of this whole business is either we can sit back and complain that they're not asking us, or we can give them really no choice but to ask us. And the first step in that is developing individuals who we trust who are truly experts in their area. I'm going way back to the days when we were trying to keep the doors of the Oregon School for the Blind open. We eventually lost that battle, but it took them 20 years to do it. But they kept talking to the hospital, who was the neighbor, who thought that the school should no longer be school property. Those children should be allowed in our public classrooms. Well, that hospital now owns that property. So you can tell what their motivation was. So we did a number of things to try to keep that from happening. And the first thing that we did was we made ourselves experts. Not just experts in our personal testimony, although those are very valid things to share with the press, because let's face it, when it comes to any issue dealing with blindness, there's going to be a bit of the strumming of the old heartstrings to make that story sing for the reading public. But what we did was we went out and we researched the history of that school's property. How did they end up being there in the first place? We got the documents. We had a member who was a historian and went to the archives and looked up who donated the property back in the beginning of our statehood and those kinds of things. And we put that together as handouts because the press love it when somebody else does the research for them. I don't blame them. I love it when somebody else does my job as long as they do it well. So we made ourselves as an organization the go-to place as this story was repeated in a variety of ways over the course of, like I say, a couple of decades. We became the subject expert. So I want to talk to you about becoming that subject expert on any topic. As an affiliate, if you were to pick the top three or four different subjects that you would like the press to come to you on, what might those be? I would imagine special education would be one of them. Who in your affiliate knows the most on the subject of special education?
Teachers.
Probably it's somebody who's taught before. It wouldn't hurt, quite honestly, if you have a very active young member to get their parents kind of to be part of that team of expertise in the area of special education. Whether it be a student in public schools or a student at the local school for the blind, whichever it might be, developing, starting not from scratch. Don't take a person who never, you know, was blinded at the age of 43 and turn them into your special education expert. Doesn't have much validity, does it? It does help when they can say so-and-so with a master's degree in special education from thus and such university. So being able to have some true credentials to back up the passion about the subject really can be quite helpful. If it's not one of your members today, go recruit such a person to be a member. so that they can be your mouthpiece when it comes to this kind of thing. So one, identify the two or three people that have potential to be your subject expert in a given area. Make sure that you're not all about one subject and not about a variety of subjects. If it's not special education, what's the second most likely thing that you want them to come to you about when there's a question about how it's being done or who's doing it? Rehabilitation, maybe? So who knows more about your state agency? Who is, in fact, a good case in point when we're talking about what makes that work well and when it works well? That's a valuable person to have as a subject expert. And I'll tell you, when push comes to shove, if there's something your affiliate is passionate about in general, and there is not currently a subject expert, and you can't put your finger on somebody who you might woo into the fold and become your subject expert, you can do it from scratch. I'm now convinced you can do almost anything from a YouTube video. A year ago, I picked up the ukulele for the first time, and now I'm ready to perform with the ukulele in next year's, not this year, wasn't prepped for that, next year's showcase. And I did it all on YouTube. You can take a subject and say, I'm going to develop expertise in this area and spend some time researching it and gathering together documents and tutorials and whatever the subject might be, and develop yourself into an expert. There's a couple of things that you need to follow up that with. And in fact, in my opinion, there's a couple of things you need to follow up, whether or not you consider yourself already an expert, and that is to find a way to get published. Write an op-ed piece on the subject you're passionate about before it becomes front page news. Write a piece. It could be letters to the editor. It could be, like I said, an op-ed piece that you're sending into the newspaper saying, this is something your community cares about and you can write something in and get it into the hands of somebody at the newspaper or newspapers, plural, or the radio station, whatever it might be. But get yourself, your subject expert, published in some fashion so that you can have that thing to point to, so that the people looking to see, are you really an expert, can look at more than just your degree, can look to see other people have talked to this person. You know, it used to be that it had to be published in a newspaper. If it wasn't in a newspaper, didn't happen. If it wasn't in a book, didn't happen. If it wasn't in a magazine, it didn't happen. But that's not the case in 2015. You can self-publish in a blog or in your website of your affiliate and how you publish that agency, or excuse me, that organizational newsletter. But you do, if you really want to be taken seriously, have to have said something on that subject prior to it becoming a hotbed of controversy. The last thing I would say dealing with all of this is, if you say, it's me, I'm the subject expert, people are going to look the other way. What you want to do is to get somebody else to declare you're a subject expert. So get the superintendent of the school for the blind, the head of the rehabilitation agency, to say something where they quote you, quote your subject expert in something they've written, published, or said to the media, so that when somebody goes up to that Google, that's what you do when you want to look up something, right? You go to Google and you type in the person's name. What pops up? If what pops up when you're checking out to see whether or not Mad Myrtle should be listened to, and when they put in Myrtle, if all they get is reports about her being hauled off to the state institution, then she kind of loses some validity, right? But if when you do that search, it says you'll find an article about special education in, you know, the September 4th issue of the local newspaper, or at allaboutspecialed.org, something, that you actually end up pulling together a pretty good set of credentials. And just like that story I was telling, that it's not just where it's published, but where it's cross-linked to, that causes those things to raise higher on the search list. Once you've got some things published, then it's to your advantage to go out and tell other people, especially other websites that have similar concerns to yours, to cross-link to you. Refer to that article. Refer to that person elsewhere. Whatever you can do, in the old newspaper parlance, to get it above the fold, you need to be doing. This does not happen the day the controversy happens. When the fertilizer hits the ventilation system, is no time to get started doing this. Unless it's going to be a multi-year battle of some kind, then the earlier you establish expertise, the more likely the press is going to come to you and ask you your opinion first. And it's amazing how much influence you can have on that article, not just based on what you said, but who else you referred to. Often, if not nearly always, a reporter learns about another person in the that they might put in their article because the first person they talked to mentioned their name and gave their forwarding information. That's the kind of ideas we're talking about. I'd like to know if anybody in the audience has any stories to tell about how they or somebody in their affiliate were contacted by the press about something. You didn't contact the press. The press contacted you. Anybody?
I've had that happen with ham radio things a time or two.
Ham radio things, yeah. Did they ever publish an article?
We had an incident in Mississippi where a college-age ham radio operator was murdered by her boyfriend. And I was actually called because for a while I was president of one of the local ham radio clubs, and they wanted a statement from me about the person who was killed. And, it showed up in the local newspaper, which, that's not how I'd rather... I wish it would have been on a more positive,
positive thing,
but sometimes that's, still, they went looking for our ham radio club, saw my name on there as I had just gone off as president, and the website may not have actually been updated because I think they still thought I was president, but thought I was still president. But anyway, nevertheless, I was called.
And you can do some of this reputation building, by the way, with social media like Twitter and Facebook and those kinds of things. It's really helpful if you publish something and you get your top 10 people out there to like it, and even better, write a one-liner following whatever you published, indicating that they agreed with you on whatever that might be. Anybody else? See, if we wait around for the press to come to us and we do no development to prepare ourselves to answer the questions, if we do no preparation to assure that when we are asked the question, we have a better than 50-50 chance of answering the question, then we're simply going to be reactive rather than proactive in the issues that matter to us. We need to take the time, just like you invest in making that next year's convention better than last year's convention, to make your newsletter better than it used to be. When it comes to advocacy and interaction with the media about topics that matter to us, we need to be building those. We talk here in ACB a lot right now about something called capacity building. It's not what you have today. It's making sure you have all the parts in place for when you need them. And oftentimes, when you need them, it's too late to start to put it together. Thank you for your attention. I appreciate it. I'm going to pass it on to our next speaker, who is Mr. Duke. Thank you very much.
All right.
I'm going to have to step out because I'm a subject expert in the subject of Apple technology. And they want me to get back there.
Nolan, he's the competition.
Okay? You were outstanding. Thank you so much.
Thank you again, Nolan.
So now we know who the competition is, see? there's so much in what Nolan and Brian have both said, the about 3 years ago, I believe it was, the Public Relations Committee assembled a press release handbook. It is up on your the ACB website under resources and public relations, and I didn't bring a sheet with the specific link typed on it, but go to the ACB website and look on the under the resource page. I believe you'll find it there. If not, look for press release handbook and you'll see it there. Now don't worry, I'm not going to read the whole handbook to you. If you do the whole handbook at once, it's you know, it will put you to sleep, but it is a very good how-to on that, if you follow it, will help you create something that is called a press release, also in some circles known as a media release, that coming about especially since social media, but but the mechanics of no matter what you call it, media release, press release, are the same. And the purpose of a press release is to tell the media about something that you have going on that, that is of significance. And at the same time, plant that feeling that maybe the, you know, Dallas Council of the Blind may be an expert on things that have to do with blindness and people who are blind, just because of their name, Dallas, you know, Council of the Blind, whatever. And so if you send out press releases that are of you know, good quality, accurate, then sooner or later when something comes up on the subject of blindness, just as is my example of the ham radio, a while ago, the news story itself was about the fact that someone was murdered. But in the process of digging into it, they found out that the person was a ham radio operator, had a ham radio license. They went looking for other hams who may have known that person. And as it turned out, I did know the person, but I didn't know the person very well. I said that to the reporter and went on to say how they, you know, came to the radio club meetings and were enthusiastic about being in the hobby and you know, talked about what the tragedy was. So I didn't have a lot to say, but still I was able to give them a statement. And as I said, I wish it had been on a more positive subject, but nevertheless, sometimes the things aren't positive. But when you have an event that is newsworthy, send a press release to the media outlets in your area, newspaper, radio, and television. They may do something with it. They may contact you and say, hey, we want to know more about that for a, you know, for an article. It may be an article on the back page. It may turn into a full page feature. It depends on the news. And I'll come back to dependency on what else is happening in a minute. But the basics of a press release are the who, what, when, where, and the why sometimes. It is not newsworthy that the always hungry chapter of the Mississippi Council of the Blind got together on Saturday for lunch. You know, that's not newsworthy. It is newsworthy if you say Congressman Greg Harper will address the members of the Always Hungry chapter of the Mississippi Council of the Blind at their Saturday lunch next week. And because a congressman is coming to this meeting, you may draw some media attention. So, you know, when you have something where you're pretty sure that someone who is of note in the community or in the public eye will be there, tell the media. You know, Congressman Harper's office may tell the media that he's going to be there, but don't wait around to see if they are going to tell the media. You tell them, hey, the congressman's coming. He's going to talk to us at lunch. We don't know what he's going to say, but, you know, come hear him. And odds are good they're going to come in there and talk to him and hear what he has to say. He gets the press. You get the press because you invited them. And in the process of all of that, you get to talk to the media one-on-one about what you do and why there is a Council of the Blind. Brian's Mad Myrtle scenario. A press release has sort of an opening. It reminds me, you know, somewhat of a memorandum, you know, the subject line of an email message or whatever. So your press release will have a subject line. Word that subject line very carefully. So if we say, you know, the Council of the Blind says closing the school for the blind is stupid. Or we say, Council of the Blind says that closing the school for the blind will severely impair the education of students who are blind. Which one of those is going to be the most effective? Yeah. You know, which one of those sentences, you know, so choose your wording very carefully. Let the press release tell the media what it's, you know, make sure that the press release stays on the subject. If the subject is closing the school for the blind, don't ramble around into jobs or senior citizens. Keep it focused. And at the end of the press release, have a sentence or two, no more than three, that says the Council of the Blind is a consumer organization consisting of, and you know, whatever, and just a couple of things about the organization that, as Brian said, sets up the Council of the Blind as a possible source for experts on why closing the school for the blind is a bad idea that maybe is stupid. You know, you just don't want to say it that way. There's in the press release handbook, there's a form that talks about that. In that paragraph where you talk about your organization, you don't give the history, the entire history that you started in 1912 and this and that. You know, you can make reference to that you've been in existence for X number of years or whatever. Again, to plant those seeds of maybe these people know what they're talking about. But at the same time, don't overwhelm people with, as Nolan said, things that you think are the center of the universe that really are not in terms of the media. Now, the media is a strange thing sometimes. And the internet media is you know, totally out there in some cases. Let's say that the congressman is in fact coming and the media is all lined up, ready to come hear him, and something hits the fan. Let me tell you what happened in Mississippi a while back. Again, in the ham radio group that I belong to, there was a national ham radio event at the end of June called Field Day, where all the ham radio clubs, or a lot of the ham radio clubs, about 2,000 clubs across the country, go out in various places like public parks or out in the woods or somewhere, and they set up their emergency equipment and they do a 24-hour operation on nothing but emergency power and emergency this and that to test all this equipment for the next time we have a Hurricane Katrina or whatever, which we hope is a long, 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 long time from now. But and the organization that put this operation together has a scoring system where you get some points. You get points for each contact that you make during the event, the clubs that are participating do. And you also get some points for, did you publicize this event? Did you tell the media about it? Did the media show up? Well, I work in broadcast media. I run a radio reading service that's part of Mississippi Public Broadcasting, which is a statewide public radio and television network. And I had had an interview scheduled for to talk about this event that was coming up, Field Day, we call it. Several newspapers had been contacted. Well, we got one local newspaper. We operated in a small town called Pelahatchie. And the news media we got was the Pelahatchie News, which was, you know, the weekly newspaper. But here's why we didn't get the statewide newspaper. And here's why the interview that I was supposed to do on my own network got bumped. There were several things come into play. For the first 2 weeks of June, there was an unusually high number of bear sightings, you know, like black bear sightings in the state of Mississippi. It's not uncommon to have a few of them in the counties that are along the Mississippi River, but we had, you know, for a while, we had like 4 and 5 different bear reports per day coming in from counties, 3 or 4 counties in from the river, and that's pretty unusual. Somebody said they were hungry, but, you know, later it got in the month, they were hot. I can guarantee you that. But the point is, the point is the uniqueness of bear physical sightings of four-legged bears walking around in Mississippi can upstage almost any other event, you know. So we had that. On June 16th, there was an unthinkable tragedy in Charleston, South Carolina. The tragedy itself got some play in coverage in the newspaper because of what it was and because of the fact that we're in Mississippi. The tragedy turned into a debate and a hue and a cry and an uproar over the flag of the state of South Carolina, which is the exact replica of the Confederate flag, and the Mississippi flag, which is not a total replica, but does have the exact Confederate flag in one corner of it, and which has been, you know, off and on controversial for several years. Now, after all of that came up, if you couldn't tie your story to something to do about that flag, forget it. You weren't going to get any publicity. I don't care how good your press release was. And just about the time we got that to start to level out, it hadn't gone away, and it won't for a while, but about the time that the flag stories began to at least level off, the Supreme Court made a ruling on the Affordable Health Care Act, and that began to take off. But before that could take off, they came down with the big one, the same-sex marriage issue. And that, just, you know, if I don't care what your event is, I don't care what you stand for, when something like that hits, you're not going to get front page coverage unless you are part of that group that the Supreme Court ruled in favor of or whatever or against. And so for anybody other than viewpoints about the flag and viewpoints about marriage and viewpoints about health care, June was a very tough month to get into the newspaper in the state of Mississippi. And it got to the point where even the bears lost out. I mean, you know, so your press releases, sometimes that you think that they fall on deaf ears, or you think that people don't read them and don't pay attention to them because they don't show up for your events that you write to them about. Just know that in many, many cases, they will at least file the contact information. And that's why every press release has on it. If you look at the press releases that come out of the American Council of the Blind, for additional information, contact. There's an email, a phone number, and a name that they can contact. That information goes into the database of the news media, you know, that are doing their job, so that the next time a subject comes up that is somehow related to blindness, they're going to call you or at least they're going to see your name and say, well, maybe these people will be people we need to talk to. Just like they will find the names that they need to talk to when the Supreme Court made its ruling on same-sex marriages. They knew who to call. They didn't have to go out on the street and find them. They knew where they were. They knew who to call because of other press releases that various organizations had done. So you, when you send out a press release, if it doesn't produce results, think of it as planting seeds. Some seeds grow quickly, some grow slowly, but they're out there. And as I say, you know, the fact that sometimes your news story is, as they say, used to say, left on the cutting room floor because of something that happened that was bigger, quote unquote. You know, those things happen. They can't be predicted. They're unavoidable. But the point is, you've tried. The media now has contact information for your organization and for to deal with you on subjects, you know, when they're appropriate. Now, just because you've sent it to them once and they didn't do anything with it, or even if they did do something with it, the next time there's a relevant subject, transportation, rehabilitation, education, whatever, send them another one. Send them another release about education. If there's a bill in your legislature to reduce funding for certain elements of education, even though the bill itself doesn't necessarily say anything about blindness, if they start cutting things related that, you know, that would draw good teachers to your state, weigh in on it. This will impact the education of students who are blind because the special ed teachers and so forth can, you know. So you can send a press release even if the subject itself doesn't specifically address the blindness issue. And we're just about out of time and time to wrap up here, but that's, again, I refer you to the resource handbook, press release handbook on the resource page of the website. It will tell you, there are several examples of press releases there. You can see the ACB press releases that go out regularly. Contact your local media organizations and get the addresses to where you can send press releases to, and maintain that in your information database. Any questions? Katie, I put them all to sleep.
We hope you enjoyed this panel.
We are at the...
Hello, Mr. Mayor.
He is.
At the point of our Missouri Council of the Blind.
Hang on. Let me take the mic over to him.
Okay. Missouri Council of the Blind is setting up a White Cane Day for October the 10th, and we're just kind of getting started. We have captains and everything from each affiliate because we're going to do it statewide. And so we're trying to get it all together to put that out. And could you give us some suggestions on that?
White Cane Day?
Yes.
Send it to your newspapers and your television, and in particular newspaper and television stations, but the radio stations too. Get it to them at least 30 days out.
Mm-hmm.
Get some release to them, and it may take two or three as you go closer to the event. But once you know the date and where it's going to happen, send just a basic release of on, you know, October 10th, 2015, members of the Missouri Council of the Blind will host White Cane Safety Day, or whatever you're going to call it.
Mm-hmm.
A brief thing about what white canes do, mm-hmm. And then send a follow up. You know, a couple of weeks later, as close in as 3 or 4 days away from the event, as a reminder, to that way you're more likely to get some coverage. But send the first one 30 days to 6 weeks out. so that it can get placed on their calendar. Okay. And if you're wanting them to print something in the paper, you know, the same thing, a lot of the papers will have dates, you know, for information to go on the calendar page has to be received by, you know, 2 weeks out or 3 weeks. Some of them, you know, whatever, they'll tell you that on the page. But send it to them far enough ahead that they can put it on some calendars and get some assignments made for people to cover it.
Mike, do you think that the fact that it's a statewide event would have more impact?
We have 22 affiliates, and instead of everybody coming to St. Louis, everybody's going to stay in their own city, and at the same time, each affiliate in their own city will start their walk.
And that means you've got to send it to Springfield and Joplin and
well,
and
we
St.
have
Louis
a captain for each affiliate.
Yeah. And that means that each of those chapters need to be you know, asked to send these things to their own area, the media in their own area, and that way, it, you know, and to answer Jay's question, yes, it's a statewide event. It should have more impact. But at the same time, by having it sent by the chapters in those areas, it will have the local impact, too. And the local impact sometimes is what you're really going after.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else with a final question?
What'd you say?
Yeah.
All right. Well, here's Nolan again.
1 second.
Okay, Mr. Nolan.
All right. Well, I won't take any more time. Thank you all for coming. It's a tremendous pleasure to have you here. I'm sorry I wasn't able to be with you in person, but I'm so grateful to all of the committee, to the speakers, and to Katie especially for holding that phone in such a way that she probably lost all the circulation in her hands. I'm grateful for all this help, and thank you again all for coming, and we'll put together something for next summer. Thanks again. Take care.
Thank you all. Now you can go out and get warm.